Hi, I'm Dave Summers, and welcome to AMA's Edgewise, where you will hear fresh insights from recognized thought leaders across a wide range of subject matters. AMA's Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. The AMA is a global leader in professional development and education, improving the immediate performance and long-term growth of individuals and organizations. Check us out on our website, www.amanet.org. A factory worker is fired because her boss dislikes a bumper sticker on her car. A stockbroker resigns because his employer frowns on his off-work political activities. A flight attendant is grounded because her airline disapproves of her personal blog. Is it legal to fire people for engaging in free speech that makes employers uncomfortable, even if the speech has little or nothing to do with job or workplace? Well, for most American workers, the alarming answer is yes. In his new book, Speechless, Bruce Berry critiques a legal system that gives employers wide latitude to suppress worker expression and argues that freedom of speech in the workplace is excessively and needlessly limited. Berry advocates changes to law and to management practice that would expand employees' expressive rights without jeopardizing legitimate interests of employers. Bruce Berry is professor of management and sociology at Vanderbilt University, where he teaches courses on power and influence in organizations, business and society, negotiation, and the sociology of media and technology. Bruce, welcome to the program. What prompted you to write this book?
Well, what I do as a business school professor is I teach and write about and do research about workplace behavior. I've been doing that for quite some time. And in my sort of personal life on the side, I've been an activist civil libertarian, heavily involved in ACLU and other civil libertarian sorts of things. And several years ago, I started to think about the intersection of those two, ultimately landing on the connections between free speech and workplace regulations and workplace behavior. And once I hit on that intersection, I started to notice a lot of examples of it, sometimes very dramatic examples. And so what started out as perhaps a small-scale academic article sort of project mushroomed as I talked to more and more people into a book-length thing, and that's how we ended up where we are now.
Where does the law stand in terms of the employee's freedom of speech? I mean, what topics are off-limits?
Well, the law, as I kind of explain in the book, is pretty complicated, because when you ask the question, is there free speech in the workplace, people will often sort of laugh and say, well, that's a short book. Of course not. Your employer can control your speech. But I'm interested in a pretty broad canvas of speech. I'm interested in anything somebody does that is expressive in nature, whether it's at work or away from work, during the workday, after the workday, that arouses the employer's interest and attention and ultimately disapproval. And what the law says is it depends on a number of factors whether you actually have legally protected rights to speech. We could summarize those factors really briefly in this way. It depends, first of all, partly on where you live, because some of this is governed by employment law, which varies from state to state. And it also depends partly on the type of job you have, because the law applies rather differently in the public sector versus the private sector. And then lastly, it depends somewhat on the topic of your speech, because there are a few laws out there, although not very many, that actually protect speech on certain subjects. Some states, for example, have protections for political speech from employer interference. Also think about whistleblowing as a form of speech that often gets some protection.
And I would think that anything related to unionization would be protected.
Well, the National Labor Relations Act does protect so-called concerted activity, which would include some forms of speech that is directed toward potentially organizing a workplace. And so that's a case where yes, speech can be protected, although it's often open to the interpretation of courts and the political winds of how things are going with respect to the National Labor Relations Board at a particular point in time. Let me add one other thing about sort of the exceptions to all of this. You know, the basic employment system in the United States, the employment at will system, kind of fundamentally says that if you're not a member of a labor union, you don't have some other kind of contract, you can be fired for any reason or no reason, and that includes your speech, whether on the job or off the job. So for people who are at will employees, which is probably the majority, it's a hard thing to count, but the majority of American workers, including many, many managers, there are no limits on the power that an employer can exert to try to control, regulate, or punish your speech.
Well, that was exactly the next question I wanted to ask, and that was, what about work-related speech? For example, criticism of your manager or your company's leaders.
Well, in a sense, there's no difference between work-related speech and non-work-related speech, in the sense that if you're an at-will employee, you can be disciplined or fired for either, and neither gets protection. I think work-related speech, though, is a really interesting part of this, because it's where a lot of people get in trouble, and it's where employers clearly have a lot of discretion. You know, the law may grant employers all this power if they want to fire you for your political speech or for your work-related speech or for any kind of speech, but the law doesn't require that. And so a really important part of understanding the landscape for workplace speech and free speech for workers is thinking about, well, what do employers do with this power, and how do they use it? How touchy, how sensitive are they toward workplace-related speech that they might think harms the business or harms the kind of social comedy or harmony of the workplace? And how quick a trigger do they have, a trigger of alarm? And one of the things I talk about a lot in the book that I'm concerned about is that I think too many employers have too much of a hair trigger of alarm that brings them down too hard on employee speech that really doesn't necessarily harm the business.
Well, Bruce, that is actually an area that I wanted to explore with you. You see, in today's workplace, there seems to be a movement towards more command and controlled. Do you think that this is reflected in management's response to individuals who have an opinion about the way things are working?
Well, I think it's quite interesting that the way you frame that question as a movement toward more command and control. Because, you know, you could look at modern management theory over the last half a century as a kind of a movement toward more collaboration, more involvement, more participation by workers. People like me who teach at business schools have been telling our students about delegation and empowerment and participation and even dissent and openness for years. So, you know, to say that it's more command and control than ever is almost to imply that it's kind of all some sort of sham, you know, these things we tell our students, fronting for really what is really ever-expanding corporate tyranny. What I suspect in reality is that you know, there's as much variety in these kinds of organizational cultures as there are organizations. That is, for some organizations, I think they really do mean it when they say they want openness and dissent and participation. But I think a lot of companies really just want openness on their own terms and participation on their own terms. I mean, a lot of employees, we can start looking at the sort of corporate culture and corporate codes of a lot of organizations, and they'll all talk the talk of a happy workplace with involved participating workers. But we know also from talking to managers and workers that everyone knows that in many situations you have to watch what you say and when you say it, because employers really don't want that much openness and that much free speech. And so trying to understand how much free speech employees have is part of it requires trying to understand these evolving corporate cultures.
Now, as an employee, I mean, what impact does the question of freedom of speech have in terms of performance? I was thinking in terms of creativity, initiative, and the willingness to give an opinion.
Well, I think that it's a complicated question. What free speech does, granting employees more expressive rights, if you will, I think what it does is it does create those things. I mean, we know that free speech in society is regarded as this fundamentally important good in an open democratic society because it does things like fostering among citizens participation and creativity and innovation and engagement. And I think there are some who would look at this topic and say, oh, well, yeah, that's all great for society, but when you come to work, you're here to work, not to speak. You do your free speech on your own time. But I argue that these fundamental societal benefits of free speech, they're things that employers want in their workplaces as well, or at least they say they do. I mean, if you really do want your employees to sit there, shut up, do their work, not interact with each other, not speak, if you will, you have the right to demand it. You may not keep your employees very long. I think that something we have to remember also is that you could say that work is for work and you do your speech on your own time, but the fact of the matter is that's a naive view of work. Work is where people actually live out their lives. You know, it's where a lot of adults have opportunities to interact with other adults, especially people who are different from themselves, people who are different along lines of race and gender and class, national origin, religion. And so work is a place, whether employers like it or not, work is where people develop not just their work identities, but really their personal selves, their community selves, their civic selves. And that's why I think this is an important topic, because it's not just about making it a workplace culture that might be a little less overbearing or command and control. It really has, I think, an effect on how people engage as citizens in their communities. If they see employers willing to take actions against them, and I cite many examples in the book, people fired for blogs and political bumper stickers and community activism, if people see their citizenship in tension with their job security, I think that's dysfunctional not just for workplaces, but for the health of our very democracy.
Have worker organizations taken the issue of oppression of employee speech to court?
Well, that's where a distinction between the public sector and the private sector in part becomes important. Because the First Amendment, the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, it has no application by a very basic principle of constitutional law. It has no application in private sector settings. That is, if it's a private party infringing on your right to free speech or to due process or name your favorite constitutional right, you generally have no cause of action because the Constitution doesn't bind private parties. But there is a presumption that government workers have First Amendment rights, and so that's where a lot of the court case action has been. And the Supreme Court, over many years in various cases, has settled on a view there that says that government employees have free speech rights, but only if they're speaking on matters of public concern or public interest, and only if the employer, the government agency, doesn't regard this as an excessive intrusion on the ability of that agency to do whatever it does, to deliver its services or to maintain a harmonious workplace. And so courts, when they're confronted with these kinds of cases and challenges, they have to weigh that balance, the employee's free speech claim, the employer's claim that this harms the agency. Over in the private sector, where most people work, there isn't generally that kind of ability to go to court, but there are in a few states, because a few states have some pretty good laws that say, you know what, your things you do off work that are legal and don't impact the business, an employer can't fire you for. Only a handful of states have those laws. I wish all states did. But if those cases go to court, the same kind of balance applies, because those laws tend to say, well, there's a balance. The employee can claim a right to do this off-work behavior, but the employer can make an argument that this harms the business or its interests, and a court, a judge or a jury, has to weigh that balance. And one of the problems I identify in the book is that I think courts have tended to side with employers too much. That is, they've deferred, they've been too deferential to employer claims that employee speech harms the business without really scrutinizing that harm closely enough.
Now, about insubordination, let's say a manager demands an employee to do something and an employee speaks back, perhaps argues that it's the wrong thing to do. The manager gets uptight, declares the employee guilty of insubordination. I mean, is this an issue related to freedom of speech?
Yeah, I would say that's certainly not an irrelevant question. It's very relevant, and it gives me an opportunity, by way of answering it, to say that my argument in my book is not a manifesto for anything goes. There clearly is employee speech that poses threats to legitimate employer interests, and speech also, I should add, can be abusive, it can be harassing, and it can certainly be insubordinate in the example you describe. And a working free enterprise system does not require employers to tolerate all that kind of speech, nor do I think it should. My concern, though, is that this culture of management predictability and control that we cultivate in our society, it invites employers not so much to pursue some kind of active conspiracy to suppress all free speech, but it invites them to instinctively regard even remote threats with suspicion and to deal with them harshly. But I would certainly defend the ability of employers to not have to tolerate just sort of grossly insubordinate or abusive or harassing speech. They shouldn't have to tolerate employees who off work use the internet to communicate their hatred for the company. They don't have to tolerate that. That's not free speech that I would defend.
What is the fine line that companies can take? I mean, what can leaders do to ensure that their employees feel that they can speak up, but do not say anything that may harm the organization?
Well, that's a good question, and I think one thing employers can do is not overreact. Try to understand that the relationship between them and their employees and the organization's culture and society is a broad and complicated one. I think too many leaders, executives, managers see their relationship with their employees as this two-sided labor market transaction, which, you know, it surely is. But it's embedded in a larger system. And a big part of my argument is that employees, you know, work as we're employees, as I said earlier, develop their expressive lives and potentially their civic and community selves. And I would urge employers to imagine themselves as part of this larger democratic experiment within which a labor market economy most certainly exists. So while protecting their rights to run their business as they see fit and to maintain workplace efficiency and profitability and all that, to also understand, though, that when employees speak, it doesn't necessarily threaten seriously the interests of the business. And so try and get away from that instinct to believe that it does.
Or I guess a supervisor should learn to count to 10 before taking action, right?
Well, I tend to think that's good advice for everybody in all situations, so I guess I'd say yes to that.
Our thanks to Bruce Berry for being with us today. His new book is entitled Speechless. It's time for You've Been Spotted, where we interview random people who are attending a workshop or seminar at one of our 5 executive conference centers. For more information on our executive conference centers and seminars, please visit our website, www.amanet.org. And now here's Kevin Lee.
Today at the AMA Center, I visited AMA seminar Mastering Challenging Management Conversations, taught by AMA seminar leader Deborah Hamilton. And I asked seminar participants to share their experiences dealing with difficult management situations.
I am in a managerial position, and one of the role play that we did in the class is actually one of the issues that I need to address. The sensitive issue was somebody wearing perfume in the work environment and others finding it to be sensitive. Some of the things that came out of it was it wasn't a personal issue. It's more of an issue that we need to make sure we're providing a comfortable environment for everyone. So it was just some useful tools to take with me.
I'm Deborah Hamilton. I'm the course leader for Mastering Challenging Management Conversations. I think one of the ahas is when participants discover that they can be in control of a conversation, and we mean emotional control, and having the ability to direct the conversation for a positive, proactive, win-win outcome, I think is very empowering for the participants. We talk about that throughout the course, the types of sidetracks and the types of emotions and the communication styles that you might expect in different kinds of conversations.
In my workplace, we have somebody with a sexual preference, and it's been a little difficult because some people find even the smallest comments to be offensive to them. But I think they have to, it's just been a work in process, because that's probably one of the issues that's not highly addressed. You know, it is a sensitive, it's a little different than sexual discrimination. You know, this is just the orientation. Some people just find it a little bit of offensive, but I think they have to deal with that as well.
I deal directly with the C-level management, and I have one person in particular who, we have very, very different work styles, personality styles, and he is old enough to be my father and often treats me like I'm his daughter. I'm 20 years younger than most of these other managers, so, and I'm one of 2 women. So it's a challenging environment, and it really is an emotional thing more than a not knowing how to talk to them or respond to them. It's really not getting upset and kind of emotionally charged.
Was there an exercise that was very useful?
Role playing, and that is bringing you as close as possible to the real life situation. It was dealing with an employee who is habitually late. And I played the role of manager, highlighted some of the very good things that he's doing and how people look up to him as a role model, and if he addressed these issues as well, he would be a better role model.
I'm not a fan of role play, but it's helpful to watch it. Just don't really like doing it.
Did the role play help you, even though it was really painful?
It's interesting to watch. It's much easier being an observer, because when you're doing it, I think you don't get as much out of it.
But then people give you feedback, right?
Yeah, I guess.
Okay, fair enough.
For better or for worse.
You just don't have to take it personally, that's all.
Yeah, right.
Remember, we'd really like your feedback, so please drop us an email note at podcast@amanet.org or call us at 800-697-3406. That's 800-697-3406. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.